Welcome to Good Things Radio, a lifestyle show about activating your mind, body, and soul to become fully alive. And now, your host, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Good Things Radio. My name is Brooke Taylor. This is episode number 169 from Jerusalem, and it's about rush hour, so you might be able to hear the sounds of the city behind me. Starting the show, though, with bells. That sacred clamor is the sound of the bells from the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in the Old City. The same place where the Muslim call to prayer can be heard over the Western Wall as Jews are praying, and in our case, also during Holy Mass. And those bells, that is our call to prayer. The original practice of the bells was influenced actually by the Jewish practice of praying three times a day. Bells would be rung three times a day, and in some ways resembles the Islamic tradition of the call to prayer. And so this is our joyful summons. As Father Nathan reminded us during Advent, when you hear those bells, it is our cue to pray, to gather. And that's what we're going to do on this podcast in a mystical, virtual way, gathering as pilgrims in the Holy Land. As I mentioned, broadcasting in Jerusalem, just coming to the tail end of a two-week trip here. 10 days of that was on a group pilgrimage. I was blessed to co-lead with my friend, Brother John Michael Paul from the community of St. John, and two other brothers who are so fantastic, Brother Bruno, and then also Brother Michael Mary from the community. And what a blessing to be able to have three brothers on our pilgrimage in so many ways. But we're staying after all the pilgrims back home now. Extended stay here for us in preparation for the Jerusalem Marathon, running on behalf of Aid to the Church in Need. Pretty awesome team effort, by the way, of so many of you raising funds, getting this word out. So I just want to thank you for your generous donations. So many stepping up for this cause, just very, very grateful. So on the next show, we'll let you know the tally, the final amount that we were able to raise, and just really excited when the final numbers come in. But ACN, mentioned before, doing so much important work. They are a pontifical foundation, Aid to the Church in Need, and helping in places like Syria, in the Middle East, even though they do work around the globe, in Venezuela right now as well. So a big thank you for those that shared the effort, and that includes my friend Danielle Bean, featuring it on her show, Girlfriends, and just a lot to be celebrating. But for today, I think the hardest part of the program is actually knowing how to start when you have such a monumental trip like this. How do you put into words something that can't be described? How do you distill down something that's so profound, like the empty tomb of Christ and the experiences of the food, the music, the complexity of the history, the religious experience, and kind of tie it up in a tidy little 30-minute podcast? And still today, it's the ongoing history that's being lived out, the center point of fate for the Jews, the Christians, the Muslims. So it's a really challenging task. So please just have grace. Forgive me between the fatigue and just being so overwhelmed by it all to try to do a justice, you know, a good job to do justice to it. But I was able to record some sounds along the way. So just thinking, unless you're driving, if you could close your eyes, you can almost see these scenes that you're going to be hearing about on today's show. And one thing that I learned this time around is that no two pilgrimages are ever the same. But I think that's true of life. You know, there are no two Lents that are ever going to be the same, or Advents or Labors or anything that can be exact. And that was definitely the case with our trip now. And even though we visited almost all of the same places, there were some things that were different this time around, but the journey was so different. And one of the things right out of the box that I thought was so cool this time around was how many familiar faces we saw. I mean, who would have thought? We ran into so many people that we knew. So I was walking with Brother Michael Mary, and we were going up to the Mount of Olives, and we were walking towards a group. They were walking towards us, and he said, "Is that Scott Hahn?" And sure enough, it was. So just to be able to run into him there, kind of between the Church of the Ascension on down to Gethsemane, we saw and met, talked to Dr. Scott and Kimberly Hahn. I ran into a friend, Catholic singer Kitty Cleveland, Brother Anthony. He is a Franciscan that we had met in Jericho during our first trip, is no longer in Jericho, but we just happened to run into him riding his bike as we were walking. And then on Mount Tabor, the Mount of Transfiguration, I met a Polish priest. There's a story there, but he was just kind of walking through and we stopped, talked, connected, and took a selfie. And then Catholic speaker, writer Rachel Balducci, of all things, ran into the same priest at the same place a few days later, sent a photo of them together. So just reminded me of like the great reunion in heaven, you know, because you think people you would never expect to run into or people you didn't know become like brothers and sisters. We had a chance also with Brother Bruno Thomas with us. We ran into a hermit friend of his that he had met in Ethiopia, and it just was such a spectacular experience. And how God is so good to take care of our every need, and then on top of that. So we'll talk about the trip. The extra special treat, I think, is our interview with Jarir, and that will be on the next program. This is going to be a two-part series of the Holy Land. Jarir was our tour guide in 2017. Expertly led our trip. And so I was really excited to work with him again, had a chance to get to know him last time. He is an Arab Christian. He's a husband. He's a father of twin girls and quite a man of wisdom and experience. So much to share from this is his native land, being born here, his family, things that were passed down, and what he wants us to know. And so that's going to be on next week's program. But for now, settle in. Thank you so much for being a part of the journey and taking the time to listen to this program. We're going to jump right in. Let's go.
If you have any bags that will not fit, we ask that you please use the bring the bag to the front of the door from which...
The synagogue at the time of Jesus, not this one. Now, how do we know that this is possibly is? Because when they did the excavation and they went down low to do their digging, they came to the floor of the synagogue.
So a few sounds from the start of our trip are airplane and then Jarir, our tour guide I was mentioning, and where we started, and we had pilgrims coming from all over. That's how we started this trip. Different arrival times, some delays, but that was okay. You know, that's to be expected. Different cities around the U.S. all coming in to where we were going to get started, which was Tiberias, flying into Tel Aviv and then going up to the area of Galilee. So we had pilgrims from Texas, from Tennessee, West Virginia, of course, Ohio. And there was also a woman named Rita who joined us from Lithuania. In English, this is an English-speaking tour. So what a joy to be able to get to know her. And that's always part of the fun, though if you're like me and you're an introvert, it's a little bit nerve-wracking because you don't know who you're going to meet and you're going to be very close. We start as strangers, but we travel and by the end, I believe, are family because you experience so much together. And so that first night, we just kind of had a round table to get to know you. And from the whys that you're here, the whys are always so powerful. It's amazing. Each person feeling that summons of why they are on pilgrimage. From a gentleman, Bobby, that we got to know who is in the Hot Air Balloon Hall of Fame. He's traveled around the world, never been to the Holy Land. And in his 80s, why now? To a couple celebrating their 50th anniversary. And then two girlfriends, two women together who were best friends and had experienced great loss, each of them losing a lot in their life and why they were called to this trip together. So everyone just very moving and then together as a unit. And so that's where we started. We started in Tiberias. That is the Mount of Beatitudes. Also Tacba, where Jesus multiplied the loaves and fishes, Capernaum. And so that's what you heard Jarir reference there in that little audio clip. And one of the things that Father Bargil Pixner, he's a late Benedictine monk living in the Holy Land, also an archaeologist, wrote a book. He points this out. He says, there exists not only a progressive history of salvation, but also a geography of salvation, where God reveals himself not just in a specific time, but in specific places in his creation. So when you get there, you realize I am in these specific places. And even though I remember the first time, it just blew my mind how beautiful everything was. And I don't know why I was so surprised, but just the lush, the flora and fauna, the landscape of the Mount of Beatitudes and the Sea of Galilee, and being able to put it all together, finally, for the first time, in a way you never would be able to imagine. And one of the new places that we visited was Magdala, which I highly recommend. And Nazareth, Cana, you know there is beautiful. Because in Cana, everyone, you know, the couples we had there renewing their wedding vows and just not a dry eye in the room. But also from, you know, the widows. And we are all on a journey. So these are the moments that really allow you to stop and to think about your life, what God is doing, where you've been, how he's redeemed you. So I think that was just a beautiful way to begin. It's kind of away from the busyness of the city. And then a new stop on the way for us, we stopped at Nazareth, of course, was Haifa. And we went there on Ash Wednesday. Take a listen.
Hi, welcome to Ash Wednesday, the beginning of Lent. Starting here in Haifa, our journey is we travel to Mount Carmel today and celebrate Mass at a very holy place. And this spot is a beautiful gardens and temple overlooking the Mediterranean. And this beautiful day as we begin Lent and quite literally step into this penitential season with Brother John Michael Paul and Brother Michael Mary and Brother Bruno and our amazing pilgrims here in the Holy Land. God bless you.
Yeah, so Mount Carmel, which is the Stella Maris Monastery that's on top of the mountain, which is beautiful. Haifa is gorgeous and it overlooks the Mediterranean. So the Stella Maris Monastery is, of course, Stella Maris is Star of the Sea, referencing Our Lady, but it's also Mount Carmel, which is right on the slope, and that is the place where the Carmelite order originated. I didn't even realize that. It's also over Elijah's cave, and I think one of the most glorious spots in all of Israel, which is saying a lot. But it was just so neat to be there on Ash Wednesday, and then right after, just a short drive, driving to the beach, basically. It's Caesarea Maritime. There's an aqueduct there where a lot of history is there. It's an ancient Phoenician city, but then where tradition says St. Paul set out for Tarsus. So you're thinking, this, my mind is being blown every step of the way from seeing Elijah's cave and reading scripture where he went to there on the shore. And, you know, anytime that you can kind of incorporate a beach stop into a pilgrimage, I am all for it. So it wasn't very long, but, you know, it was a beautiful day. It was Ash Wednesday. So we've got ashes on our foreheads and we're here at the sand. We're there overlooking the sea. And for me, probably that was one of the most meaningful moments because Brother John Michael Paul had brought his stole and he heard my confession. And so to think about all of it swirling together, we are ashes. To ashes we shall return. Return to me, O God. And that's from the book of Joel. And to think about divine mercy and how he casts our sin in the sea of his mercy, it just is overwhelming to ponder. You know, your mind just kind of short circuits. And it was neat too because I was able to go with my son. So Grant and I, my 15-year-old, experiencing this whole trip in different ways, but yet together. So he's like skipping and hopping and, you know, throwing rocks into the sea and enjoying every piece of sand and sun because it was really cold in Ohio when we left. And, you know, then on my end, just being drowned in the spiritual significance of it all and everyone having the same experience, but processing it totally different. It's just so awesome. So that was definitely one of the early highlights on the trip. And then the visit to Nazareth, Mary's Well, the Church of the Annunciation, St. Joseph's Workshop, the synagogue, where Jesus, I mean, this was his home. And it was said that they were going to throw him off the cliff headlong, where then he had to go and basically flee. And so that was, in a very brief snapshot, kind of the early part of the trip. And then Jerusalem, and that's where we stayed for the rest of the trip. I think one of the coolest things about pilgrimage is the unexpected encounters. That music, that hymn by a group I will never see again, that I don't know of, was so amazing. And you know, with pilgrimage, there's a walking away, right? You're walking away from your current life and comfort zone and routine, and you're walking toward an unknown experience, totally out of your normal day-to-day life and the balance that you're used to, walking away from the culture, and then walking into these places that provide an encounter with our Lord in a way that we have no idea. Like, I feel similarly, it's when you walk in a door. We walked into so many doors that we didn't know what was going to be on the other side. And it enlivens us and it wakes us up. It gives us a deeper sense of purpose. So I feel that music you just heard is a part of that, that chant. So many stops along the way, you will hear music, the melody of different traditions, whether it's contemporary Christian worship, whether it's these ancient chants, languages, styles of worship. That particular piece of audio I recorded was funny. We all were in a different part of the church and ran up to get this because the acoustics in this church are extraordinary. And it's in the Church of St. Anne. And this was an Asian tour. They sang every verse of that, "Then Sings My Soul" and "How Great Thou Art." And so St. Anne, I actually hadn't been in that church the last time that we were there, but it is one of the best preserved Crusader churches in Jerusalem. And so this church, it marks the place where tradition says is the home of Jesus' maternal grandparents, of which, of course, is Anne and Joachim, in the birthplace of Mary, so Our Lady's parents. But what was interesting about that, so you've got this really gorgeous church and all this singing inside, and then right across the street is the Pool of Bethesda, and that's according to tradition, but it was this, I mean, and you can see, you look down, you have to look deep down, and you see this enormous overgrowth, but there are Byzantine church ruins there. And it really struck me because you thought, oh, what did this look like? And how we need to protect and preserve these holy sites, because I think especially if you're Catholic, you just kind of grow accustomed to these incredible edifices because you grew up seeing them, whether it's on TV or, you know, images of the Vatican, these basilicas, these cathedrals in our cities. But then there's a human cost to keeping them maintained and alive and beautiful. How so much of that becomes very clear. I think even spots in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, you think, man, this is worn down. It's stone. And at once you can see that this was gold and these mosaics. And a great deal of it is still very well preserved, but a lot of it is under construction, under scaffolding. And like the Syrian church, I had spent the night in a Syrian Jacobite chapel that has not been maintained, and it looks pathetic. And I say that with a breaking heart because it looks like a bombed out church. And I've said that before. And so it just, for me, was this contrast of, okay, you've got this really amazingly well-preserved church where you go in and your spirit is so uplifted that you want to just go and sing, and people do, to then right across the street, this incredibly significant place, this Pool of Bethesda, that now is just rocks that no one would stop and look twice at. And so I think that for me, that was one of the big takeaways the first time I visited, and why I really wanted to support Aid to the Church in Need, because these are the areas where you have a few people carrying a millennia of Christianity on their shoulders, and it's buckling, and they need those support beams to maintain it, to keep it flourishing. And that is the Franciscans, and that is Aid to the Church in Need, and our church. I want you to take a listen. I recorded, when I talk about music and the traditions and all that is fused in the center here in Jerusalem of our faith, take a listen to this chant from the Coptic Christians at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So that happens to be right at the back of the edicule there in the center of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. It's not necessarily, it's not in the center. I suppose it's more to the west, but it is the tomb of Jesus. And it is kind of the church within a church, a little house that you, I'm sure, have seen images of. And there's a tiny little, I suppose you would call it a chapel. It's just a little shrine area that houses the Coptic priest. And their liturgy is there, at least it was when I was there, in the morning, on a Thursday morning at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, before we had Mass at Golgotha, at Calvary. And that Coptic chant is so old. It's a very old tradition with the ancient liturgies. It has ties to Syria, to Jerusalem. And so I think that as we kind of wrap up this part one of the Lenten pilgrimage, this virtual pilgrimage to the Holy Land, I can share a few of the takeaways as I listen to that music, as I ponder everything here on the conclusion of our trip, as I record this in Jerusalem on the last night of our pilgrimage. And that is that it is time to work, to dig in and to make something beautiful for God in a renewed sense of zeal for our faith. Being in a land where you see Christians fighting for their lives every day to maintain the faith, to preserve this holy place. While we were here, I saw a headline where Christians are outraged, but it falls on deaf ears here. Well, I don't want to say here, and I don't mean to in any way say anything derogatory, but it's also reality where there was anti-Christian, and it was serious. It was threatening graffiti that was on the Dormition Abbey walls, and that's where Catholic tradition, Orthodox tradition, and other traditions have different sites that we would say Mary fell asleep. It's in French, and that she was assumed into heaven. And those assailants were not brought to justice. The charges were dropped. They were apprehended, but they weren't brought to justice. And so it's frustrating, and over again, you see these stories where the Christians are really holding up, again, like I said, a great deal of the faith here. One of the things that was often repeated by our tour guide, who's a lifelong Christian here in this land, was Christians are dying out because we always turn the other cheek. We have been taken advantage of, painted a certain way, mistreated, marginalized, and so often looked over. And so I want to be aware for me as a woman, as a Christian, as a Catholic, as a mother, and I don't think that I'll ever run the Jerusalem Marathon race ever again in my life. Only God knows that. But I can influence my children. My son Grant, also a pilgrim on this trip, as I mentioned. There's no question this journey will have a lifetime impact on him. And he can take that and advocate for Christ, for Christians, and go to his school, his community, his circle, for the beauty and the heritage of our Christian faith. And what a privilege that is. And we talked about that. It was interesting. One of our pilgrims on the last day, we were in a round table again, kind of talking about what our most memorable takeaways were. And one of our travelers, Dale, said, you know, there's that phrase, God is dead or God is not dead. And he said, it's so clear when you go here that God is alive and well, and alive in the Jews, alive in the Muslims, alive in the Christians. But we have our work cut out for us, that we need to know what we believe and why, and to be bold about defending our Lord. What a gift that is. And, you know, our tour guide, Jarir, he knows four different languages. The pilgrim Rita that I was sharing her story a little bit from Lithuania with you, she is a doctor. She's a woman of profound faith and uses that gift of healing and intellect to heal. We had another pilgrim on our trip, Juan. Juan is a trip in and of himself, but he's also a psychologist. He lived and worked, studied in India, now works in Texas, works with those who've experienced trauma, works at an orphanage. And so this was a great point of conversation for my son and I. You know, it's not okay just to be playing video games. You know, so much we kind of take for granted and we don't keep working. And so through encounter, which is, I think, what Lent is about, we should be transfigured, energized, even when it defies all reason, to have a heart and motivation to be about the work of the kingdom and to work hard wherever we are. Because whether we are 75 years old and bedridden, whether we are 17 and not even sure what we believe, that we have to work for it. And so on next week's show, we're going to kind of pick it up from there. The story of an Arab Christian, Jarir, that you don't want to miss. and how one of our travelers met the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, the Archbishop of the City of Jerusalem, in really a quite amazing personal story. So a big thank you to my producer, Mark Cumming, for his dynamic skills and quick work putting the show together in Cleveland while I am here in the Holy Land. Thank you for kind of sticking with me with imperfect audio as I sit and have Jerusalem kind of in the backdrop. You can hear a bit of the sounds. Thank you again for joining us with this journey, this pilgrimage, and a bit of my disjointed thoughts. But praise be to God for the gift of all of us as we are hobos. And Father Edward Hayes says, homeward bound. That's what we are. For any audio needs you might have, check out markatcominghomestudio.com. And may you feel God's immense love for you in his birth, life, passion, death, and resurrection this Lent and always. Until next time, friends, God bless you.